Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, I'm Dan Brunel, president of Dearborn West Franchise Consulting.
Dan, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. Before we talk about your current role, current organization, give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
Sure, John. You know, I've been in talent acquisition for over 30 years. The first 15 of that was in the staffing industry, working for one of the large Fortune 500 staffing companies out of New York. And about 17 years ago, I left the staffing industry, the traditional staffing industry, and started up a franchise consulting company. And we essentially do two things. We recruit franchisees for market expansion purposes for our franchise clients. And we also take businesses and turn their business model into franchises and then help them distribute those as well.
Oh, wow. That's super exciting. Definitely can't wait to dive a little bit deeper into that with you. Tell us a little bit about how did you get into that? How did it all come about? The franchising consultants, how is that something that you've been trying to do on your own and then you just discovered that? Give us a story behind that.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm a pretty good case study for the types of candidates that I work with every day. I was a mid-career guy and I had been in operations and then executive management in the staffing industry. And that was tremendously interesting learning experience, but I also had a young family at the time and it was consuming a tremendous amount of my time and energy. And I really wasn't getting to decide where my family lived, you know, or where I was going to sleep at night after a while. And it just got to a point where I was ready to break away from the corporate world and do something on my own that would allow me to spend more time with my family, be home at night, and pick what city we were going to live in. So I really kind of stumbled into franchise consulting because I didn't know it existed, but it fit the bill for what I was looking for in order to structure my life in a way that would allow me to do the things that were truly important to me. So I found it through a business opportunity. That was my initial entry into this space. I paid somebody to teach me the business, and it was such a new niche-y kind of thing that, you know, they certainly hadn't developed a final word on how to do it in terms of processes and best practices and whatnot. So my initial first year in the business, I was feeding back the organization that had trained me with upgrades to their training. I'm like, hey, you should do this, or you should try this technology or that tool. And after a while, the owner of that company just asked me to write a training product for him. So I got the opportunity to create a customized training program for a large broker network. And I've done that a couple of times so far now. And most recently, I'm working with a broker network called FranSave out of the Philadelphia area. And they promised to be one of the top franchise brokerage networks in the country in years to come because their embrace of technology and the philosophy of how they approach the business, I think are really quite spectacular.
Mm-hmm. No, that's very interesting. And you've mentioned technology and innovation, you know, in franchising. Share with us, what are some of the trends and ideas that you're very excited about when it comes to, you know, franchising industry in general? What are some of the things that, you know, you're observing, researching that, you know, in your mind will be the next big thing?
Absolutely. I know you see a lot of this kind of stuff, John, but you know, the trends are really driven by the constant change that's inherent in our economy. I think that COVID obviously was a huge influencer on everything. Government distortions in the marketplace, quite frankly, major influencer on how things are trending. And of course, advancing technology is a real big part of that. I think that, you know, the technology really excites me because when you look at things like just the quick service restaurant and fast casual segment out there, they are going to essentially touchless operations where the front staff is gone. I mean, you'll come into a place, you'll order off the menu on your cell phone. You already know that menus are gone if you've been to a restaurant lately. I mean, it's like, you know, get the QR code on your phone and there's your menu. So there's no more paper or plastic menus out there. The same thing is happening with the front office or the front of house staff. There'll be a panel of lockers that are temperature controlled. You'll have the cooks from the back put a sealed container in there that is kept warm. Or if they're ordering drinks, I mean, they'll have a red locker or a blue locker, basically. So drinks are cold and meals are hot. You come up with your cell phone, it opens the door for you and you pull your product out and go on your merry way. That's pretty high tech food stuff, but it's not limited to food. I mean, franchising covers virtually every vertical market. People may not be aware of that, but franchising is way beyond just retail and food applications. A lot of business services, consumer service, et cetera. But you have technology permeating those segments as well. Like you have sort of an Uber concept for dog walkers, where you can kind of Uber up a dog walker to go take your dog out during the day while you're at work. You know, that's kind of cool stuff. I think also the way that sales and marketing is being approached by these franchise companies is a very much a data-driven approach these days too, which I think is pretty cool. I mean, you have roofing companies that take weather data from NOAA and they run it through an algorithm and they can predict with a high degree of certainty how much storm damage has occurred in a given zip code based on the data. I mean, that kind of stuff is very, very cool because it's really empowering, I think, a whole new level of achievement for these franchise organizations.
Oh, that's very interesting. And, you know, franchising is not something that's, at least, I guess, not in my circles, that, you know, it's a common trend as far as when you look at, you know, whether the technology you're building or a particular service you're trying to offer to make that, you know, franchisable, so to say, which is very interesting. And tell us a little bit more about what are some of the key ingredients for a company or, you know, an organization to become franchisable, to be very successful when it comes to franchising its services or its products? What are some of the things that you really look for initially when you consider a particular company that wants to franchise its services?
Well, that's a great question, John, because sometimes you would think that it's much better to have 3 to 5 years of history and at least 20 operating units so that you have enough data to be able to make some assumptions about. But there's some very successful franchise systems that were conceived of from the very beginning as a franchise concept and were rolled out immediately as a franchise. So they didn't have history. They didn't have multiple units. So I think that it can happen from a concept directly into franchising, or it can be a concept that's been around for a while that turns into a franchise. But I think the most important thing is the cost structure of the business, which means at the end of the day, how profitable it's going to be. I personally think that if you can't make $100,000 owning your own business, you probably shouldn't be owning that business. And now I understand there's a lot of businesses that produce below that level and people, you know, have lots of them. You know, they accumulate lots of different profit centers. And that's fine. If you've got 50 units all throwing off $50,000 a year, that's, you know, I think that's pretty respectable, but it's a longer way to get there. And I personally like businesses that can, you know, put you into a six-figure income range, because I just think it takes a lot of work to make a business successful. Even if you have a ready-made template and you're sort of painting by numbers, it's still a lot of work and a lot of effort to get there. So you should be positioning yourself with businesses that are going to reward you appropriately. So it has to have the payoff, you know, the goods have to be there, and it's got to have a cost structure that allows that to make sense and be replicatable in other markets. If you live right next door to a furniture factory and you can get your furniture at below wholesale prices and you have almost no distribution costs, you could do really well with a business right there. Whereas a guy, you know, 500 miles away from the factory, the whole story would be different. So we have to look at those types of elements and really make it on a case-by-case basis decision. Is this a replicatable model that other people are going to have success with? And that's really the essence of whether or not something should be franchised.
Right. No, that's very interesting. And I'm pretty sure we can probably spend the rest of the episode talking about this.
Sure.
When it comes to common pitfalls or some of the mistakes that company operators make when making the decision whether to go for the franchising route or not, what are some of the things that you can highlight as, you know, as you work with different organizations that really franchise their models?
Absolutely. Well, I think it's really important to be focused on the long game, and companies need to be adequately capitalized before they move into franchising as a distribution method. Franchising is probably one of the most effective distribution methods ever. And you know, let's face it, I mean, distribution is the backbone of business. That is the key. And I hate to say it, but it even supersedes having the best quality product or service. Because we can see some examples out there in the marketplace of, you know, organizations that may sell sandwiches or hamburgers that may not arguably be the best ever that you've ever had, but they can distribute them more widely and effectively than anybody else. So they win that burger war or that sandwich war. So the companies need to go into it looking down the road. They had to have adequate capital, because when you become a new franchise, there's a tendency to want to just sell some units. You know, everybody wants to get out of the gate. They want to get things happening. They want to get the royalty stream coming in, because that's what franchising is. You know, that's the beauty of franchising for the franchisor is the royalties. They don't care about franchise fees. You know, the franchise fees are established to essentially to cover the cost of acquiring new franchisees and bringing them in. That's the purpose of the franchise fee. So it's not really a profit center. But when you have a brand new franchise organization, a lot of times that is their only profit center. So, you know, they stretch a little bit. You know, they'll find a candidate that they're a little bit, you know, it's like when you're a manager and you got to fill a slot in your team and you're desperate. You start wishing skills on the guy that's interviewing, right? You're like, oh, he can make it. You know, franchisors do the same thing when they're young and new, because they just want to get some dots on the map to start the flow, you know? But I think franchisors need to have the patience to pick the right people, because whenever they pick the wrong person on the front end, that person is going to wash out in 2 or 3 years anyway, and they're back to square one with that particular market, and they've lost ground and their potential market share. So it's suboptimal for them to bring in somebody who's not going to be a success story. So I think that's a real fundamental part is, you know, sticking to the guns of your original vision of what a franchisee should bring to the table and how they should act. But if people or franchisors can resist that temptation, I think that they can do quite well. But the other thing is having an organized distribution strategy, because there's a lot of people in the world that will tell a company, oh yeah, I can turn you into a franchise. There's a lot of lawyers that can do the paperwork, you know, create the FDD that has to be submitted to the Federal Trade Commission. Yeah, that's kind of perfunctory work though. The real art is operationalizing every element of your business and turning it into a teachable format that you can show other people so that you can start to replicate that business model. So there's a couple of elements there that I think, you know, if companies are they plan from the beginning, they know that they have the adequate capital so they can stick to their guns, and that they have a very well-formed distribution strategy, which should be a part of the consulting firm that helped them become a franchise. I mean, just simply helping you get your paperwork together and become a franchise doesn't really do much. You have to have that distribution. You have to have somebody who can help you put those dots on the map so that your organization can start to meet its potential.
Right, right. No, those are very interesting concepts. How did your experience in talent acquisition and staffing help you, or, you know, maybe the other way around? How do you use some of the lessons learned and that experience in that industry now in franchising? Because at the end of the day, the war for talent, the war on retention is real, and it's omnipresent in all industries, regardless of the business type or the business industry. How does that help you as you partner with other founders and operators that are franchising their businesses when it comes to talent acquisition?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think that having that experience in the staffing industry really gave me a lot of insight into just relating with individual humans, understanding their motivations, you know, helping them crystallize their objectives. Because in the talent acquisition staffing world, you need to help candidates sort out what's truly important to them and then align them with an organization that's going to help support those objectives. That's essentially the same thing that we're doing in franchise development on the franchise market development side, except the stakes are much, much higher. You know, I mean, somebody changing jobs, that can be a stressful thing, but somebody leaving a job to start a business, that's a whole different layer of stress. And being able to connect with the people, you know, on a level that really understands what the questions are, you know, I mean, that's, I think, what we're doing most often. And in staffing, it was very similar, but people are, it's easy to find answers these days. You know, the internet is filled with answers. A lot of them are wrong, but they're answers nonetheless. But the real thing that moves the world are the questions. You know, you have to have insight and understanding to ask the right questions. And you know, that's a big holdover, I think, from the staffing industry is helping people understand what the questions are so that they can truly crystallize their objectives and then be able to go out and look for the right answer.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. At the end of the day, it's on the minds of every executive, surrounding themselves with the right type of people for the right type of organization and all of that. So
you're right. And you know what? Across the board, every industry, every business that I talk to, that's their number one challenge right now is finding talent. Mm-hmm. It is a real talent crisis, I think. And it's you know, going to be very rewarding to the organizations and the people that can help bridge that gap.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, we experienced that, especially now coming out of the pandemic with companies, you know, hiring remotely and being able to offer all kinds of benefits. But also on the other spectrum, the competition for the same talent had increased because now companies of the same, you know, much better packages and much better, you know, benefits all around targeting the same talent pool. So that becomes a challenge, you know, all across. When it comes to franchising on a global scale, how different is that from going on a national side, you know, within the US versus considering your business to go, you know, internationally to completely other markets?
Sure.
What are some of the recommendations you have there that you had observed with companies that have succeeded in that space and those that have not?
Yeah. You know, I think the real key to international expansion is having people in that market that are native to that market, people who understand how government operates. There's lots of ministries of this and that to navigate in countries around the world if you want to start up a business. So you need to have people on the ground that have had experience dealing with governmental agencies or environmental agencies or whatever the roadblocks are. You need people that are I think, familiar with those roadblocks in that particular country to be able to effectively navigate them. But the mechanics of franchising is very, very similar, you know, in terms of the model and the training and conveying information and all of that. I think the biggest point before they get to an international location is making sure that their product or service translates well into that culture, you know, because some things don't, you know, I mean, it's just, certain food products are not going to play well in certain areas, but you'll see franchises that still value that market, and they'll come in and they'll tweak their menu. You know, there's some franchises like taco franchises that end up in India. They'll have vegetarian tacos, and you know, so they'll make minor tweaks of things that aren't necessarily available in the States, but they're trying to accommodate the local market and accommodate those preferences. But yeah. I think that's the key, you know, making sure that your product is going to translate first and then finding local guys to use your model to bring that business to life in that country.
Mm-hmm. No, that's very interesting because every market, every culture is very peculiar when it comes to specifics of how they operate, how they consume products and things like that. So I'm sure that adds another, you know, layer of complexity when taking into consideration whether to go international or not. So that's very interesting. When it comes to, you know, the skill sets that are, you know, at the end of the day required to become a successful franchisor? Franchisor, is that the right term?
There's franchisors and franchisees.
So those that basically build a business and then scale that to a level where you are ready to make that a franchise for others to operate your business, you know, on their own. What are some of the traits and skills that you have observed through the, you know, your experience that really make that particular founder operator more successful than the others?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think that achievement is a pretty simple thing. And you'll see that people that are high achievers in whatever they do, it's because of their work ethic and their intellect that they apply to the equation. I mean, you know, I remember several years ago, Tim Sanders put out a book called Love is the Killer App. And I think it's still very, very true. I mean, people need to have that love and that care about what they're doing. And they need to have a mental attitude that I'm going to do the best at whatever I'm doing. You know, I think that if you have a successful person with a successful outlook, you can give them a hot dog cart out in front of Home Depot and they'll make that thing rock. You could also give them a Friday's restaurant, which is orders of magnitude more complexity, and they'll make that rock too, because it's an innate thing that somebody says, I'm not going to try this. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to be in the top 20% when I'm done. That's what makes the difference between a successful operator and a not successful operator, irrespective of how good the model is, because a model is simply a tool, and then a tool in the right hands can do beautiful things. But in the wrong hands, a tool can be simply a device for destruction, you know? So it really comes down to the operator having those innate success qualities, and they can work, because that's the beauty of a franchise. It's a model that's already been tested. You don't have to rethink it. You just need to execute on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that allows people with a lot of, you know, personal success motivation to really thrive and do their best.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. No, that's very interesting. When it comes to your personal sources for research, for learning, you know, staying up to date on just franchising industry in general, what are some of the sources that you consume on a daily basis? Share with us those.
Yeah, you bet. I read a lot. I'm just very, very avid reader. And I, of course, read a lot of business publications. Franchise Times is probably the bellwether industry mag for the franchise industry. So that is a centerpiece. But the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Entrepreneur Magazine, lots and lots of business periodicals. The interdisciplinary ones like QSR Magazine is the quick service restaurant magazine. So if I'm working in certain segments, I read the trade journals that come along with those segments as well. But in general, I don't think you can be over-informed, especially in the business that I'm in. So the more you know, the greater your value to your customers. So I like to stay on top of all of the contemporary stuff that comes out of the business journals. But I'm also a huge fan of biographies. You know, when I was younger, I read the business book of the month, you know, whatever the latest, you know, Magic Banana Theory book that came out. And I was very into that, and nothing wrong with new ideas or I respect writing. I'm a writer myself, so I appreciate everyone's thoughts, but I really like to read a biography and learn just from what this person did in their life, because there's lots of lessons in there that weren't manufactured and packaged up for you. You get to make your own inferences based on how this person's life's unfolded and how they dealt with adversity that they saw in their world. I love those kind of lessons. And it's much more interesting to me now in my old age to read the biographies than, you know, every management book that comes out each month.
So you couldn't have set me up for the next question any better as you were talking about books. What are you currently reading, and what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Wow. You know, there's a lot of great books out there. And I have to say right now I'm reading the Killing Crazy Horse. It's one of those biographies that Bill O'Reilly and Martin Dugard put together. They've done several, but this one's on the just the tragic nature of how the US government interfaced with the Native American tribes in the 1800s. But that's what I'm reading right now, along with, my daughter was a big fan of the Hamilton play, so she got me interested in Alexander Hamilton. So I just finished Ron Chernow's Alexander Hamilton biography, which is a great book, but boy, you could give yourself a back strain carrying it around because it's a pretty big tome. But I also like, I guess as far as if there was one book, I mean, the only thing that in all fairness that I could say is the Bible, quite frankly. I think it is an amazing tool for how to live and how to thrive. So if I had to pick one, that would be my one book.
Oh, that's great. Those are awesome recommendations, and we'll make those available in the show notes for our listeners. And Dan, for anyone who would love to get in touch with you, discuss ideas on, you know, potentially franchising or whatever the case may be, what's the easiest way to connect with you?
Yeah, well, anyone can call me at any time at 951-587-6864. Or reach out to me through my email address, which is dbrunell@dearbornwest. That's dearbornwest.com.
That's awesome. And we'll list your contact info if you'd like in the show notes as well, so that folks can connect with you. Dan, I can't thank you enough for your insights today. It was very short, but very insightful conversation. Personally learned quite a bit. We're going to stay in touch, and I do a lot of that with all of my guests, that we do a follow-up recording in about a year to see how much I've changed and transpired based on the conversation we had a year ago. So I'm definitely looking forward to that with you.
Great. Well, that sounds great. I really appreciate it, John, and I enjoyed our time together. So I'll look forward to doing it again.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.